Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Arlene Cohen. And
you are listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for needlework artists.
Oh, I like it that we're artists this week.
Yes. Very sophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all of that hooey. Brought to us, you know, each time Arlene and I get together, brought to us by Fire Poppies. Susan Winter at the Fire Poppies there. We appreciate that. Couple of things. Remember now, if you're looking for a stand, Susan has the Lowry stands and all the accessories. And so you can order there from her. And she's been able to keep them in stock to a degree. But then, as you can imagine, these days, getting shipments from England is not as rapid as possible. So be a little patient on that. But she does have, she carries the full line. So you can get those from her. And then she also is taking sign-ups now, official sign-ups, for Brenda Gervais' Coming to America series. And the mini kit she has is $35. And then other kits, which include the linen, are $82. And she's shipping those second day, FedEx second day, at a flat rate of $10.90. So that's she's got that all set up. So you just contact the shop. And pre-order deadline is June 14. If you're interested in Brenda Gervais' Coming to America series. Mm-hmm. Also, you want to check out the Fire Poppies website. New website that is all tied into her inventory. So if you order on the website, it is constantly updated so you know if it's in stock or not, which is good. So you can order things that you know are going to be shipped out to you, or if they're not coming, then you can, I'm sure, place your order and or call the shop and get on the list for the next trip, shipment. But either way, a very nice site, and it's very nicely done too. Really easy to move around in and find things. But the key is, it's you know, she has them in stock, so that's good. Yeah,
I'm on the website right now, and this is definitely new from last time I was on.
Yes, it's quite new, isn't it? Yeah, it's really different. Yeah,
I like this.
Yeah, she did a good job with that one. Yep. I mean, it's very pleasing to look at, and yep. So there you have that. That's good. Having done a few websites, not a small undertaking to set those things up, and then especially if you have inventory, then you got to put all that stuff in, and more power to her. But as a customer, real plus, real big plus. And then also she has, she's one of the shops that has the exclusive kit from Erica Michaels and Lady Dot Creations. Called the kit is called Lions, Tigers, and Trims, Oh My. And it's $53. You can pre-order on the website, and she'll have 20 of them available initially. So if you're interested in that exclusive kit from Linda Stolz at Erica Michaels and Lady Dot Creates their, it's called Lions, Tigers, and Trims, Oh My. It's quite a little thing. Go to the firepoppies.com website and get in on the deal. She has 20 to start. I'm sure more will be coming. And then also remember for our
as I'm looking at it right now, go under new. That's where you will definitely find the lion, because I had not heard about that, Lions, Tigers, and Trims. And you can definitely find it under new, because it's new.
Well, that just works out beautifully.
Yes. Sorry to interrupt. Sorry.
No, just, not at all. No.
I'm exploring as you're talking. So keep going.
You just shop away. It's fine.
Yep.
So all of that. And then remember the Royal Garden, Debbie Rowley Royal Garden Needle Point Project that Vaughn and I are starting on July 5. Susan is also carrying the kits and threads and so on and so forth for that. And then my own personal plug here, the Bowen seam ripper that Gayanne Rogers talked about. I'm telling you, get one of those little things. Those are handy. Small, easy to cut. Cutting one strand of silk on 40 count linen, whole lot faster these days with that seam ripper. So check that out. Folds up real nice into a small package. Very nice. Highly recommended.
Also under the new drop down. just because I was looking at, like, What's that doing? Like, I was trying to figure out, but as you continue talking, now it totally fits in with what it's doing there. Oh, excellent. Yes.
Oh, the seam ripper?
Yeah, I didn't make the connection until you kept talking, and now I'm like, oh, that's why it's there. Yep. Okay.
Yeah, get one of those little puppies. Mm-hmm. Mm. You'll be you'll be glad to have it on the tool tray, I guarantee you. Mm-hmm. Yep. Oh, of course, you probably don't need one because you never rip anything out, but for those of us who do.
Two nights ago, I had to rip out some stuff so that last night I was able to start fresh. But for what I was doing, I didn't use a seam ripper. I'm trying to think. There probably have been times where I've used a seam ripper, but more often than not, I will just, I'll cut off the excess thread and just use a needle to pull it out. But yeah, there have been times I've used a seam ripper. Never mind. Keep going.
Okay. You just ponder that, Arlene. Just ponder.
I will.
So all those things from Fire Poppies, firepoppies.com. Thanks to Susan for sponsoring the show. Mm-hmm. Let's see. We got a truckload of things. Quarantine stitch hours continue Tuesday and Thursday nights through May, 8 o'clock Eastern time on our YouTube channel. And you can, wetalkfiber.com/YouTube. Best thing is subscribe. Just subscribe there. It eliminates all the hassle. Just subscribe and make sure you click the bell that gives you all the notifications. Then a half hour before the show starts, you will get a notification that we're going to be live and you'll have a link, and it's just so much easier if you subscribe. So do that. And then, of course, Friday Night Live continues. Tuesday and Thursday with the quarantine shows in May, and then we'll look at what we want to do in June. But Friday Night Live shows continue. And then also June 7, now at 2 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. June 7, 2 p.m. Eastern time on our YouTube channel, another live show with Natalie Dupuy, where Natalie has sent me a bunch of gold work threads and bits and pieces and so on and so forth. And then she is going to instruct me on how to couch them down, how to apply them to ground cloth live. So the idea is you can watch me be an idiot and ask questions, and Natalie will be there to straighten us all out. So that's 2 o'clock, June 7, 2 o'clock Eastern time on our YouTube channel. That's a live show. And I'll have more on that later. And within the next few days, I will put a list of the items that she has sent me so that if you want to join us on your own, you can order those same items. You can't get them from Natalie. She doesn't do that kind of thing. But I'll put down a couple of shops where you can get goldwork things. So if you want to dabble in goldwork under the guise of Natalie, who has, who unlike me, actually has a clue, a fun thing to do. There's no project. It's just simply ground cloth and thread and how to use it, how to cut it, how to manipulate it, how to couch it down, those kinds of things. There's absolutely no project involved. So you don't have to buy a project or anything. You're just buying pieces of thread. I mean, she sent me just some lengths of gold thread, and I have to get some a Gutermann thread for couching purposes. But she just sent me just some lengths and pieces. Mm-hmm. So it's not, there's no project. So it's just simply basically a doodle cloth thing. But you at least can get your feet wet with gold work if you're at all interested, either in doing a full-blown project or doing some enhancement of a project, whatever. Mm-hmm. So that'll be fun. June 7, 2 o'clock, and there'll be more about that as we get closer, which now that I think about it is only about 3 weeks away.
Yeah, it's not that far away.
It was a long time away, and now it's not. Mm-hmm. Then Debbie Raleigh's Royal Garden, as I said, starts July 5. And then we're going to start the Dawn to Dusk stitch along Textured Treasures on August 1. And that Textured Treasures, those kits you need to get from Karen Dudzinski at Textured Treasures. And because there's a rack of threads for that thing, depending on what colorway you have. And there's five colorways, and now there's a sixth one that is called Fiber Talk. that she put together for me because it's the rosy skies, which is basically pink colors. She took those colors out and put in blue. So there is a sixth colorway now that is the rosy sky scheme in blue. So you can choose from that too.
I take it that's this color scheme you're going to be doing?
Yes.
Got it.
Because I like the rosy sky is a lot of whites and off-whites, and then she has pinks and so on as your color. Mm-hmm. And I really like the white, off-white, that whole, the look of it, but I just didn't want pink. I'd much prefer blue. So she said, hey, I'll put it together for you. Mind if I make it a thing and name it? I'd go for it. So, so we're doing that. Several people, mainly from the live shows have gotten involved. It started with, Beth Ellicott and Cindy Baldwin. I'm naming them because it's all their fault. It started on a Needlepoint Nation. I think it was Needlepoint Nation. Anyway, we got into a thing, dragged Vaughn into it, which is, you know, like, yeah, that's not hard. And, so it became a thing. And now, so we're going to do it. So several people have lined up. So if you're interested, check that out. It's really a great design. It really is. So that's all the stuff I have. And then you have a couple of items.
I do. So, yes. Just very timely kinds of things in ways that, stitchers, crafters of all kinds are just getting involved in new ways with what's going on in the world. So one is a friend, Cassie, Cassandra Martinez. She is, Cassandra Stitches or Cassie Stitches, I forget which, on FlossTube, but I'll make sure Gary knows. She had this idea this past weekend and put it out there on her Instagram. The idea that she knows she stitches a lot, quilts a lot, does all kinds of crafts, and wanted to make a little challenge for herself. And so the challenge she made for herself was for every hour she crafts, whether it be stitching or anything else, she's going to be donating a dollar, I believe, for every hour to World Central Kitchen, WC Kitchen, you can find on Instagram as well. And they are doing some amazing work around the country. I know very much in areas that very much need food at this time. I know the Navajo Nation being one area that they are in. They work with Chefs for America. So she is using the hashtag Crafters Feed the World, which I think is just an awesome hashtag to use. And she said, I just want to pledge to make a difference. And she put it out there to invite anyone to join her. And I've seen a few people have reposted or have joined in on that idea. And for her, she said, I'm going to do it for a week and see how it goes. It's a completely open, do for yourself. But she said, I'm going to see how many hours I do in 1 week and then make a donation. So we're going to put, Gary will put a link to her Instagram post, which explains what she's doing and where she's donating her money and just encouraging anyone who wants to do something like this. And especially if you do it to use the hashtag Crafters Feed the World. And it would be awesome to see how big we can make this. Yes, any individual donation might be small, but the more people that you get involved, the bigger the overall effect. And we already know how large the stitching community is. I mean, let's face it, everyone who's listening right now is one small part of a bigger world. And if every person could do just a little bit to help in the world, especially now, especially what's going on, how awesome would that be? So one way, the way Cassie's chosen to do it and that you all could follow if you wished, is donating to World Central Kitchen, WC Kitchen. And we'll have the information on how you can do that if you wanted to. And again, if you did it to put in the hashtag Crafters Feed the World would be really awesome so that others can follow along. And then the second thing that has come along through in the last couple of days through Instagram is Julia, who is Julicious on Instagram, we'll put a link as well. She is very aware of what is going on right now, specifically in the Navajo Nation, that they are an area of the U.S. that is very much struggling with coronavirus, the needs that they usually have in terms of struggles with financial struggles, medical struggles, all the struggles they usually have are that much more difficult during this time, to the point where Doctors Without Borders has gone in to help out in that area right now. So she wanted to do something to help, and she has a copy of a cross-stitch chart that is fairly sought after, the Red and the Black 2 by Prairie Moon. And she decides she wants to raffle it off. And the way she's doing her raffle is she's encouraging people to donate to help the Navajo Nation. Specifically, we're going to put, Gary will put a link in to Julia's Instagram, which leads you to the place to donate, which is a Navajo Nation, supporting the Navajo Nation at this time website. You make a donation, any amount you want. You send a screenshot to Julia saying, I've donated. She puts you in the running to win this chart. And if cross-stitch isn't your thing, she will also put you in a running to win a hat that she will knit, because she's also a pretty prolific knitter. And of course, if you're not in it for the prizes, you could just use her link to go and donate something. This one does have an end date. She's going to pull raffle prizes on May 24th, which is this coming Sunday. And she has this all written out in her Instagram post that you can check out the link to. I just think – so these two things came up within the last few days in our stitching world. And I just love how, we're doing – we stitchers are doing what we can in the world. And I think we should just spread – what we know about and encourage anyone who can to participate in things that will, make a little corner of the world a little bit better. So I wanted to make sure to get those out there. Gary will put some links and some information that you can, or places you could go and get further information on both of these initiatives. So great.
Yay. Yeah. We were talking before we started recording, and I did not have an appreciation at all that the, Navajo Nation is really getting hit hard by this virus thing. Mm-hmm. And you were educating me a little bit there. I mean, if the Doctors Without Borders shows up, then you've got a problem.
Yeah.
So, if we can help out, that's a way to do it. And I like that idea. What a buck an hour or whatever you decide to give.
However you decide to pledge yourself. I did hear at least one or two people saying, to make a pledge. This would drive me crazy, but to make a pledge by every stitch you do. No. Well, only because there are some people that, already count their stitches for any or of other reasons. So, if you're going to do, like a penny a stitch or something like that, that could be, if you do 1,000 stitches, there's $10 right there. It's that kind of little bits of things that could help. So.
I'll just give the $10.
it's exactly. It's just whatever. I think about like when I was a kid, there was a pledge of, a jump for heart. It was for the American Heart Association where you got people to make pledges for how many with jump ropes, how many jumps you made, or those kind of pledge activities or those pledge things. And then you would get some people that would just like, oh, I'll give you X amount of dollars. But then some people who would actually give you for however many fill in the blank you did or you could do or you whatever. And whether or not that helped encourage you doing more, so be it. A self challenge. And I just thought it was a great idea and just wanted to make sure more people knew about it and encourage more people to do something. So there we go.
That's terrific. So two ways to help out the Navajo. Hey, I challenge you to contribute a buck a jump. These days. So let's see how you do, Arlene. Film it.
No, I think it was more like
five jumps. I'm done.
Something. Yeah. No.
Yeah. I'll send you the jump rope.
Yeah.
Yeah. No?
Well, if you send me the jump rope, I would definitely do more than five jumps. Trust me. I there was a time where I used to love to do like the double Dutch kind of thing. Out on the playground, some friends and I really got into that, and not very well, but we liked the challenge of it.
Yeah.
But that's a long time ago at this point.
Yeah. The knees and legs don't move as fast these days. Yeah. Yeah, people who can do that stuff, I always, every now and then a video will pop up. Man, it's amazing what some people can do with those ropes. No, I'd be on the ground 5 into it. That'd be it. Nope. No thanks. Okay, so we can help out the Navajos. So it's wckitchen.com, and I'll just put the links, both of them. I'll just do a whole thing, and then you can get involved either with Cassandra's effort or Julie's. That's great. Julia.
Yes,
Julia. Okay, yay.
Yay.
It's cool when people do that.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's got a, this thing has been an irritant for everyone, but for some people it's a whole lot more than that. So we help out when we can.
Absolutely.
Yep. All right. That's the, and thus ends the announcement segment of the Wednesday show. 20 minutes into it and all of the announcements are done. Well, it just proves we aren't sitting around watching the days go by. Okay.
Absolutely.
What day specifically was it that you started Works by ABC? Because we got 3 years in now. I remember when you started. I can't believe it's been 3 years already.
Well, if I'm going with the date that I made my Etsy store live. So it was building up for the weeks before then.
Yeah.
You know, the working on patterns and the ideas and all that. But the day I made my Etsy store live was May 19th. So that's what I'm considering is my anniversary date for Works by ABC, my design business.
So we're recording on the day.
Yep. We are recording on the day, May 19th. Yep.
It's almost as if it was planned.
Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't, but it's almost as if.
Yeah. I remember it was probably about 2 months, from the time I had the idea, maybe more than 2 months, from the time I had the idea of, could I do something like this? Now I'm thinking it's definitely more than 2 months, to actually making it happen, was really this, like, again, most of that time was like, could I really be doing this? Could I really be doing this? Would anybody be interested if I did this? To just the pure enjoyment of, I love what I'm doing right now. I am charting out patterns. I am thinking about the different aspects of design and color and that. I'm trying to explore my way through, Etsy store setup and how am I going to create physical patterns and how am I going to do also PDF options, like the logistics of it. To the point where I'm like, all right, I'm ready. It's time to go. It's showtime. and then just sit back and waiting to see what would the response be. And the way I had launched it was, I had made a floss tube video that would, introduce that. And at that point, I certainly had a wonderful community of floss tube followers, which I so appreciated. And so it was certainly that group of floss tube followers that were amongst them were my first customers. And I so appreciated that support and that initial excitement for me and, go Arlene kind of feelings. and that made a huge difference that first weekend. It was a Friday that I did that floss tube and posted that and opened, officially clicked publish, I think is the word on Etsy, officially clicked publish to everything. That made me, all right, I'm ready to continue doing this. I'm ready, by Monday, I think by the following week, I was like, all right, what new ideas could I have? What else could I be exploring in terms of design ideas? And that just, kept me going with, I really like what I've discovered here. This enjoy, cause I had designed needlework for myself. And I use the word needlework because it encompasses more than cross stitch for me. I certainly had done cross stitch designs, but also black work and canvas work and some other things, for some number of years. And it had always been for myself. It had never really been I don't need to worry about explaining this to anyone else because I'm just doing it for myself. but I realized that I wanted to start thinking about it in a different way. At that time I had one canvas work piece that I had done that I contemplated, could I turn this into a pattern that I could release? And I realized that I was really struggling to figure out how could I write up instructions for this? I had just so done it in ways that made sense to me. I've shown it on my floss tube before. I needed to put certain parts of it, because I was reproducing something that was an actual piece of art in a museum, and I needed to put parts of it at an angle to the normal vertical and horizontal that you would see. And so I overlaid it with silk gauze. And so I did these things to it that would not be your typical needlework strategies.
Right.
And so I kind of took a step back at that. I was like, you know what, maybe I'm not ready to get complicated things out. Maybe I should start with the basic, not basic, start with cross stitch patterns. And then I think it was in my second set of releases, I did do a black work design. Now that was a black work, something I had already stitched, and it was just a matter of pulling out, I admit, graph paper and pencil. It was graph paper, pieces of graph paper that I still had, and just getting them charted. So then, pretty soon after that, I was able to start branching into black work. And then soon after that came canvas work as well. But always trying to set new challenges for myself is what I've been trying to do over these last 3 years. And trying to think of new ways to approach stitching. I think the experiments and results that I've done with, for example, the designs I've done with different number of threads, like the lace work designs that, right, I've done with different strands of threads, has been one thing that I've loved and keep playing with the ideas of. The piece I released for Nashville Market this year, that landscape piece where it was about repeating a pattern and what can you do when you repeat a pattern, a small motif, I should say, when you repeat a small motif and how you could create a design even though you're repeating the same motif, working on another one like that, hoping to turn that into a series. You're just trying to do my own thing when it comes to at least some of my cross stitch designs, has just been a lot of fun in the exploration part of, where to take works by ABC.
Yeah. Well, I think that going back to that first thing, mm-hmm. you and I both teachers, I'm long ago former teacher and you a teacher, but you get to that point where, yeah, I can do a design. I have a design. I can do it. I've stitched it. But then there's that big leap. Can I teach it?
Mm-hmm.
Which
mm-hmm.
is where your instructions come in. And can I teach it if I'm not in the room?
Yeah.
And yeah, so there's a pressure point there as you go to put out your charts for sale.
Mm-hmm.
That process alone has to be maybe a little nerve-wracking in that, going over and over and over it. Does this make sense? Is this going to work? Or mm-hmm. am I going to have 5,000 emails in the first day,
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that definitely stands out when I started doing the canvas work pieces, which the canvas work pieces that I have out there, I do say very much they are intended for beginners. They are small. The idea is to introduce different stitches and different options for perhaps those who have not done canvas work before, and they are designed to just use DMC floss, while plenty of canvas work do beautiful things with all kinds of thread. One line of thought that I had was introduce canvas work to someone who hasn't done canvas work before, but using materials that would not be too difficult for them to source. And so thread being DMC as an option, you could certainly do anything you want. And then because I sell as an option, a small piece of 18 count canvas. So that could kind of eliminate the concerns of how do I get the supplies here. But certainly when I was writing the instructions for those, it was, okay, I know how to do this stitch. but now I got to write it so that someone who's never done this stitch can do this stitch. And then I can think of two, well, I just described one of them, that silk gauze overlay, which I actually have not turned into a full on. I've used parts of it in patterns, but I haven't turned that into a full pattern. But there's a blackwork piece. I'm actually staring at it right now as we're talking, that I did a few years ago that I wanted to turn into a pattern that I would put out. And actually I had put out a cross stitch version of it, and I had shown on my floss tube that the cross stitch version was what it was based on. And I had a number of requests of saying, I love the blackwork version that you've shown on your floss tube. Will you ever do the pattern for it? I'm like, yeah, I will. There's requests for it. When I actually sat down to to chart the pattern, and I'm staring at, you know, there it is on my lap, the physical, you know, framed piece. I, you know, of course, then I remembered that I actually did something very unusual in blackwork, and it had to do with trying to fit it to a certain size, that I went off kilter. You know, I was working in a traditional 2/2. I'm pretty sure it's 32 count linen, you know, where you would typically go over two threads. But there was a point, because I was trying to make it fit in a certain size, I had to go, like, I had to get offset from area to another, just so that it would work, the overall size would work. Now, this made perfect sense to me when I'm just stitching it for myself.
Yeah, but.
But I'm trying to figure out, how do I chart it so that anyone who's looking at it knows exactly what I'm talking about? And trying to come up with a solution on how to chart it, how to write it out very clearly, and then how to chart it so that it doesn't become an overwhelming, oh my God, I can't do this, from someone who's looking at the instructions.
Right.
So yeah, it is definitely, you know, a piece of the puzzle to think about, that for, like you said, sort of a teaching aspect when the teacher isn't in the room, which is to say, making sure you have good instructions when instructions are needed.
Right. Right. Yeah. Cause I'll never forget the first time I was in a classroom. You go, yeah, I know all this stuff. And then it kind of hits you. Oh, wait a minute. Do I know it well enough to explain it and then be able to address questions? You know, yeah. And that'll send you back to do the research and go over it in a whole different perspective. And, I mean, it's the old thing. If you want to learn how to do something, teach it, because you'll learn it in a hurry. I wondered about that. And so you did literally go through that, and I'm sure you do today, but not so much. Go through that mental process of, all right, is this going to make sense to anyone? Experienced or otherwise. Because you know that there's going to be, no matter what you put out and whatever level you suggest it for, there's always going to be somebody like me who's never done it before and is willing to dive into the deep end. Are my instructions going to make sense? Yeah.
Sometimes I'm looking at some sort of image or artistic piece or something, particularly I want to say something geometric, and I'm trying to visualize, can I see this in more of a grid-like fashion, i.e. can I turn it into a cross-stitch pattern? And it's hard to visualize, you know, even using half stitches or something, it's hard to visualize it looking nice in a traditional looking cross-stitch pattern. And I start to think, well, what kind of stuff would I do if I were just making this for myself? Like, I didn't have to like turn it into something for someone else. And then I try to think, well, would anyone be interested in doing it some way differently? You know?
Right.
And that's, you know, that's where one thing that I keep needing to explore and want to explore more is, you know, there's plenty of stitchers out there that are in the cross stitch world, and we're seeing such a growth and an enjoyment of booming, so to of the cross stitch world, and I love that, and I hope that a number of my designs absolutely appeal to the cross stitch world, but I do also like wanting the dipping my toes into the things that step a little bit outside the boundaries, whether that be combining stitches, combining techniques, hoping that I find the people that are interested in the kinds of things that I'm interested in. You know, a design that sure has a bunch of cross stitch in it, but then in order to achieve, for example, a certain kind of curve, there has to be some couching involved, or something that might be a little bit outside the typical cross stitch world. And you know, you never know until you give it a try. And that's what I need to do.
Well, that's the fun thing for me, just watching your design work evolve. Mm-hmm. And it truly has evolved. Mm-hmm. Is that, and now it's even become more pronounced, that willingness to not stick within the lane. Mm-hmm. To, you know, let me throw a little of this in and a little of that in, and I'll make it work. And, you know, some of your more recent designs, we've really seen that come to life and very effectively, just using the different number of strands and the mm-hmm. effect that you get out of that. Something so simple as that has, it just transforms that piece, and it really gives you, I'm putting words in your mouth, but I mean, it gives you a lot of design flexibility without really putting any significant burden on the stitcher in terms mm-hmm. of materials or technique. But then the design looks so much more sophisticated just by making that one little shift.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree. Yeah. I agree.
No, I mean, it's just, it's been fun to watch that. And I think a lot of that is that you do not view yourself as bound by a technique. Mm-hmm. You know, it's needlework. And,
yes.
You know, if this works for me, then fine. Mm-hmm. That's what we'll do. And, who was it? The lady who does the artwork. I knew I'd forget her name.
The lady who does the artwork.
She did the it's nature that I interviewed.
You gotta give me more.
Pardon me?
You got to give me more than that.
I'm working on the more. But it's like things that animals that have gone extinct or are endangered, and I'm not going to come up with her name. I'll come up with it right after we quit recording. But anyway, she takes that approach in that she does not care what the technique is. Mm-hmm. It's what is the technique that's going to give me the look that I want.
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't know that technique, I will go learn it because mm-hmm. it gives me that look. And that's what I see in your designs. And for her, she's doing them to sell them as art, not necessarily to sell them as kits or designs.
Yes.
So she doesn't have to worry about what you have to worry about, which is, can people actually execute this?
Mm-hmm.
But it's the same mentality of, I want this look, and so therefore this technique will give it to me, and I'll just have to write instructions for it. And if people want to do this design, then that's how they do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, to me, it's a, I don't know if we can say, is it, it's a different level. It's certainly a different path.
Mm-hmm.
For needlework, in that we're trying to achieve a look, and the technique is integral but almost secondary. I mean, it has to, it's whatever technique it is. And I think that's, to me, that's the cool thing about needlework in general, is that there are so many different ways to do things, and no, there are no rules that say you can't combine black work and cross stitch. It's not allowed.
Yeah.
You know, take a hike. It is too, and I'm going to do it. And so that, to me, that's been the fun of all the things, watching your work evolve. That's been the fun thing, is that, and we're really seeing that here in some of your more recent designs. And it's like you've found kind of a mental level that, oh, look out, now, you know, I can do this and I can do that. At least that's the way I view it anyway.
Well, thank you. I, you know, and sometimes, you know, sort of, especially thinking back over these 3 years and the sort of the ups and downs, and where the times that I have felt a little stuck, for lack of better words, is when I'm not finding those new ideas or those new paths to explore, where I'm feeling like a little bit in a rut of doing the same kinds of things, because I do get more charged and more excited when I'm trying something new and different. And that could just be exploring a new territory of some kind. I mean, there's all kinds of ways to explore something new, whether it be finding a new source online of inspiration, or whether it is sort of a new technique or combining new things. And I just, you know, want to I want to hope that I will, you know, keep finding new things that will keep me going. You know, that's the hope going forward. Although I do want to share, I mean, this is related and also not related. there's a meme going around. I don't know if you've seen it. That says, so in retrospect, in 2015, not a single person got the answer right to the question, where do you see yourself 5 years from now?
Mm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That is totally, you know, a thing going on related to the world as we know it right now.
Right.
But it's also something that if you take something like me and Works by ABC in 3 years, I mean, anyone could take whatever they're currently doing and so on. I didn't know what I would be doing 3 years down the line when I got this started. I didn't know if it was going to be something that I would still feel so passionate about, you know, after that first release of Patterns, you know, because I didn't know what the response was going to be. I didn't know if I would enjoy it and keep trying new things with it. I remember the first time I stumbled, not the first time, like when I rediscovered, that's the best word, when I rediscovered the old pattern books that it started with the Metropolitan Museum of Art's website, but there's been plenty of other websites. And when I say old pattern books, I'm talking like 1500s, 1600s. I had known about them because of a museum exhibit, but it was sort of like the light bulb going off. Let me go check those out. And realizing that's a treasure trove and what could I pull from that? And, you know, trying to find those kind of discoveries, you know, that leads to all kinds of new things. And that's where, you know, inspiration could come from all kinds of places. And that's where I just keep looking for the new version of that.
Yeah.
I still go back to other, you know, I still go looking at those sources of those old, you know, there's so many of those kinds of old books, which you can now find digitized online in all kinds of places. You know, of course, copyright free at this point. But you find, I don't know, sources of inspiration all over the place.
Yeah. Well, and that's just it. I mean, you have always had your designs come from a lot of history. I mean, you found the mosaic thing sticks in my mind, and I mean, you've tied them into some historic things, but it's interesting to watch you, because I doubt that there's a needleworker alive who's done significant amounts who hasn't had it at least go through their head one time. Hey, I could design something,
mm-hmm.
or
mm-hmm.
I could take this and do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then some act on it and most don't. But these days there are a lot of people, particularly in cross stitch, a lot of people who are doing at least some designing.
Absolutely.
And it's great. And of course the technology today allows that to happen. I think probably makes it much easier to dabble than when it was graph paper.
Mm-hmm.
You can dabble quite a bit and without a major investment other than your time and see how it works out. Mm-hmm. Try it out in your friends and so on and so forth. But so it's interesting in that, you know, everybody thinks about it, but then you took a shot at it, mm-hmm. and it caught fire for you,
mm-hmm.
and worked out. But I was wondering, you know, when you first put up that Etsy store,
because
mm-hmm. you know, anybody who like goes to sell insurance or any number of things, you always know you have that cushion of family and friends that you might make a few sales to get started. But mm-hmm. then reality sets in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. all right, I used all that up. Now.
Yep.
Now, am I legit or not?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. And I know that, if I'm remembering it correctly, that first weekend, which is to say, you know, the first people who probably watched my FlossTube video, being, for lack of better words, the first people who watch anybody's FlossTube video, I'm making this claim, because it's true for me and it's true, I think it's true for a lot of people, are usually the ones who are so excited to see, oh, such and such a person has put out a video, I'm going to watch that one next, kind of thing. And so I think That first weekend sales were mostly people that I recognized the names because they were mostly people who would like always leave a comment on my videos. But it got really interesting when I started to see sales of people that I didn't recognize their names. So yeah. I'm assuming those are people that didn't necessarily leave me comments, but had heard about it because of my video. And then a few weeks later, you know, through whatever channels, you know, somebody mentioning, I just got a pattern from this floss tuber who's now started doing patterns and showing the pattern. When it starts spreading, that's when I was like, okay, this is cool. You know, that now thanking so much my friends. Yes, they were my initial sales. No question about that. And yes, I thank them so much for those plugs that they gave me on their floss tubes, but that helps. And then you get to the people who were not your original, you know, circle of friends and so on. And then it goes from there. So absolutely.
Yeah. And that's just it. Your friends spread the word and that's all fine and good. But then the trick then is to get people who have no idea who you are to part with their money.
Yeah.
And do you have, what is what you're offering something that makes them do that because they have no emotional attachment? And yeah, that starts to then indicate to you, yeah, I think I have something here.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where, and I think, I'm going to say, I think any designer, what do I know? But I would think designers, when you get to a point of having a design accepted, for example, design accepted in a magazine or getting a distributor willing to pick you up where there really isn't emotional attachment in those decisions. That is somebody who's making a business decision of, yes, I think this is good for us, whether it be a published in a magazine or what have you. That's where there's really satisfaction of, yeah, right. Someone's saying this is going to be good. So,
Yeah. Well, that's just it. I mean, that's what I do all day for, you know, umpteen years, is make those decisions in a magazine. And I frankly don't care who it is or what it is. Uh-huh. It's does it serve my audience and does mm-hmm. it serve them effectively? And if it doesn't, I got no interest. Mm-hmm. And so when you start getting that kind of acceptance where, you know, we're going to put your piece in the magazine, then we're going to slap it on the cover too. Yeah, that's cool because you're published, but underneath all of that is just an endorsement of what you're doing, in mm-hmm. that this editor who has an audience to serve, and if it's not served well in a magazine, then is that issue going to sell? Mm-hmm. That's where it comes, and so then you get that extra endorsement, and that's where it really. You know, the rubber hits the road kind of thing. That's where you really get the mental payoff that, okay, I've got something legit here. I can build off of this and take it to see what happens.
And, yeah.
And that's really the way you approached it is, let me just jump in and see.
Mm-hmm.
And let it evolve from there. I mean, you didn't have some grand master plan that in 5 years I'm going to be here. Oh. Doing nope. 50 things a year and that kind of thing.
Well, and I'll tell the honest story, and I can't use a name because I honestly don't remember the name. I was watching a floss tube, and it wasn't someone I normally watch. I want to say it was one of those things that, you know, YouTube just moved me on to the next video, and I wasn't in a position where I had a hand free to kind of choose something. Like, whatever.
Yep.
And it was a stitcher in a car and who said, and I don't even remember exactly. I think afterwards I did go actually look it up, but who started out by saying, yeah, that little, it was a bird or something. Yeah, that bird I finished designing, I thought some people would be interested in it. So I opened an Etsy store and I slapped it up there. If you're interested, go check out the pattern. And it was whatever the whole context was, it was enough for me to say, what? And I went and checked out this bird or whatever it was. And it wasn't to me a very, exciting looking pattern. And I think the person was selling it for like $3, nothing. And it was the only thing that was in the person's Etsy store. But I thought, wow, you know, this person thought, why not give it a try? And I'm like, okay, this is helpful to see somebody who didn't, you know, make any big deal about it was just, I'm going to give something a try. And, you know, that it's helpful to have that kind of encounter, because it's not like I had a, like you said, 5-year business plan of, you know, X, Y, and Z is going to happen or anything like that. It was really, let me give this a try. And as I was working on it, I realized how much I was enjoying what I was doing. And that meant the world to me, you know, to find something like that. And that's what, you know, I would encourage anyone who is, you know, whether it's a design business or anything else, if you find something that you're enjoying doing, especially if you're enjoying it more than anything else you're doing in your life at a given time, keep pursuing it. You know, keep figuring out, are there ways to keep doing this in some format? Because it could really enhance your life in all kinds of ways. And I would not have pictured 3 years down the line that I'd be here, but that's because I just didn't spend any time picturing 3 years down the line. I just said, let me keep going with this. Let me see what inspiration I can keep going with it. And here I am.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, and I gotta believe, I mean, you're a math teacher. You're not an artist. You're an accomplished needleworker, but, so for design work to come out of that is quite a plus in its own right. But then, yeah, you just, all right, I'm just going to ride with this thing and see what happens. But I gotta believe it's increased your enthusiasm for needlework in general, mm-hmm. probably made you a better stitcher.
Mm-hmm. I've always had a passion for the needlework that I've done. I mean, I've said it countless times that, you know, I think people who are, I don't say need, I think you need, but you wish for a passion in your life, and whether that's yoga or gardening or, you know, whatever. And for me, as it probably is for many people who are listening right now, having a passion of working on needlework is just so important. And it certainly has made me think more about technique and designing pieces in a different way than even before, when I was just designing stuff on my own. I, for a number of years, in my math teaching world, I'd very much been interested in the connections between math and art. Went twice to an amazing conference that was called Bridges of, it had the word bridges in it, and it was specifically about bridging math and art, and loved it. And just, you know, in a little bit of pulling together full circle, how I've connected a number of my designs, you know, have that mathematical base to it. And it all comes together in that way.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you and anytime that comes up, you and Diane Herman is another one who's a math mm-hmm. professor and designs needlework, and it's all math based. And mm-hmm. same kind of thing. Yeah. It's just interesting to see it evolve. And, you know, and I'm sure people go, well, 3 years, what's the big deal? Well, for someone like you who just start out and just say, hey, let me see what happens,
yeah.
to get to the 3-year point and things are really starting to gain momentum, I think is really admirable. Because so many people would say, all right, I got a couple of designs, and then 6 months, well, I think I have one more, and then a year from now, never mind. but you've gone the opposite direction. I mean, you're gaining momentum and you're developing your designs beyond just a, you know, a straight technique.
Thank you. Yeah.
It's pretty cool. I've been thinking, I had a couple conversations lately. I mean, there's nothing good about this pandemic thing on really much of any front, but what we've seen in the needlework world, where for a lot of people it's been, oh, I got some time, you know, I can't go to work, and yeah, maybe I won't have my job, but look, I've got time now to stitch. Mm-hmm. And the conversation that I've had each time is, when this is over, and, you know, either short term, long term, whatever it might be, there's going to be some pluses.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be some positives that come out of this pandemic. I mean, it's changing our lives. There's no doubt about it. And I think that the question of what do we go back to and what do we realize we really didn't need all along and we can do without. And, you know, how does that shift things? But for needleworkers, it's really given people a chance to, you know, if I could just get an hour on this weekend, it would be really great. Well, now you've got several hours every day. And people are seizing it. You know, people are seizing the opportunity and getting stuff stitched. I mean, I don't think we've seen, just in the last couple of months, have we seen as many people do videos of all kinds? I mean, it's just a flood of stuff anymore. All kinds and online classes, and it really has taken off. And I got to believe that a good portion of that will continue after the fact. It's really been good for needlework. One of the few places I think that we can say that, but it really has been, in that people have really dug in and are sharing what they're doing. Are we seeing as many posts as we've? I mean, it just seems like we're just seeing a lot of activity these days.
I think some of my favorite from certain people that I follow and so on, the people who are using what was their commuting time to officially be stitching time, you know, every morning I am now stitching 45 minutes because that's the amount of time I would have spent in my car or on the train or whatever. And, you know, it will be interesting. Some of those jobs will go back to a physical location and some of those jobs will be changing and be staying at home. And I'm sure those kinds of stitchers will be very happy because they'll get to keep that 45 minute stitching time. But yeah, you're right. I totally agree that it has become a, you know, of course, I think we're all looking for the positives that we can find amongst this crazy experience. And this, the needlework world, the stitching community, this is definitely one of the positives. There's no doubt about that. Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be, there was an article I read a couple weeks ago that, speculation as much as anything, but expectation that New York City will take a tremendous real estate hit because the big corporations that lease tremendous amounts of office space are discovering that business can continue if people work at home. We don't need them in the office. So then of course the bean counters say, well, wait a minute, why are we spending this money? That's going to change. That'll be one of the changes is that the offices will not, why do we occupy these offices for what? We didn't lose anything while people were working at home. Let's just keep them there and save this money. And so, yeah, then do you get to keep your commuting time or your car time or your, in New York, your subway time, bus time, whatever it might be. You get to keep that, and then I keep up that discipline, keep stitching those 45 minutes. And, and you think about people on the West Coast, especially in LA, you know, the hours people spend in their cars sitting on those freeways, holy smokes, convert that to stitching. Look what you can get done. It will be interesting how life changes in general, but I think for needleworkers, there's going to be some real pluses. A lot of stores on online activities have online sales have been very strong because needleworkers are saying, "Hey, I got some time. Send me some stuff." And well, you know, we talked about Fire Poppy's website. I mean, she put up a website to better serve the online community. And it's going to be interesting to watch it. First, we got to get there, but just to watch how life changes. And I think for needleworkers, it's going to be for the better. I really do.
Yeah.
Yep.
I agree.
All right. I think we're going to call it right there, Arlene. Yep.
Once again, time has flown in chatting with you.
It happens.
Yes, it does. Yep.
All right. Well, congratulations on reaching the 3-year point. Looking forward to where you're at year number 4.
All right. Well, thank you.
It'll be fun. I'm sure of that. All right. Thanks to Susan and the Fire Poppies, all of them, for supporting the show. And thanks to everybody for listening. And this is Wednesday, so join us Thursday night for our quarantine stitch hour and Friday night for our Fiber Talk Friday Night Live, and those are on our YouTube channel. And worksbyabc.com is where you find what Arlene's doing. Follow her. Thanks.
Thank you. Take care.